Welcome to Let's Parent on Purpose. This is a podcast for parents who are intentionally building kids who will build the kingdom of God. My name is Jay Holland. I want to thank you for joining me today, along with my special guest, Jenny Price, as we talk about depression and anxiety in parenting and marriage. If this subject intrigues you and you want to catch up on some of the things we talk about, I invite you to go to letsparentonpurpose.com. where I'll put some of the notes and highlights and any links to any special helpful resources that we have. And with that, let's get into the show. All right, we are back with my good friend and longtime friend now, a quarter of my life now, Jenny. I've known you. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Not a quarter of your life, but a quarter of my life.
Yes.
This is Jenny Price. She is the wife of our senior pastor here at Covenant, Matt Price. And why don't you, I'm not going to do your bio. Why don't you do a little quick bio in case people don't know you?
So I've been married to that incredibly gorgeous pastor for 26 years, and we have raised 5 kids, still finishing up 2 of them. Age range, our twins are 13 all the way up to Will is turning 21. So those kids, 3 of them are in college, 1 is married, and you know, it could have been an empty nest period, and instead God had plans for us to continue raising 2 kids who get to really grow our character.
It's wonderful. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine you guys with an empty nest, and I think your husband would probably start bringing in hordes of homeless people into your house.
A lot of adults, so this is a protective measure.
and if you didn't catch it, you can go back and look. We recently did a Let's Parent on Purpose podcast with Jenny called A College Mom's Perspective, looking back on those years of raising her first 3 kids. Today, Jenny, we are going to talk about depression and anxiety in parenting and marriage. And so this is something that you've been open with that has been a battle of yours over your time. And so I just want to invite you now to take some time and share your story.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go all the way back to when I was born, because I think that a lot of time mental health and addiction, well, I think they're genetic for sure. And in our home, my dad battled bipolar and my sister picked up an alcohol addiction at 14, and so there were clearly things in our home that mental illness was present. And when I was 14, I had an experience of sexual abuse that the event itself may not have been, you know, in comparison to others, a huge event, and the manipulation and emotional stuff that happened for 2 years to build up to that definitely affected my emotional health. Grew up in a Christian home, and it was a fairly open home, and there were still things we didn't talk about. Mm. And so that didn't register in my life until I had my first child. But it did register in my body chemistry, and I started having severe panic attacks when I was running cross-country races. So it was
in the middle of the races.
Oh, yeah. There were some really good stories about that. So would run the first mile and then passed out 4 times in the second mile. Just
whoa.
And it could have been pressure I put on myself, but it was definitely a combination of that episode that happened at 14. It just set whatever mental health battles I was going to fight, they started then.
Wow.
And just the history of those panic attacks that, I think I went and talked to a counselor a couple times, but we never addressed it in a medical sense. And then I went to college, and I will say, you know, the mental health and spiritual health are absolutely intersecting.
Yeah.
You know, that our physical makeup depends on our spiritual makeup and vice versa. And I was in a relationship that I shouldn't have been in with a boy and really struggled to end it. And my first year of college battled pretty severe depression and modified that with some partying practices, and again didn't address the depression, the what was really happening. And my life shifted dramatically the next year out of circumstances, so that to me was, you know, a circumstantial issue. And then after I was married, and let's see, when Davis was 3, so that would have been 15 years ago ish I had a form of depression that I didn't sleep for days, and it was just such sadness and lack of functioning, and yet I had three toddlers and I got to get up and do it anyways. And that time it got to the point where I got to finally address medically, because there wasn't another way out. And there have been other situations that have happened since then, and we'll see if they come up today. Wow.
Jenny, you mentioned a word that a lot of people don't like to go near, as you were describing this, mental illness. And it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about illness, people can be ill to all kinds of different levels, and and we don't make a big deal about it. You know, I can have a cold, or I can have chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, there's all kinds of ranges of illness there. But people don't like that word, mental illness. Why do you think that is?
I think the stigma that our culture has put on mental health, you know, people think of straitjackets and things they've seen in movies, and the word crazy comes up. You know, just I'm off the charts crazy. I think the words people use to describe mental health battles. And when I say mental health, I mean addictions and any form of dependence upon life being a certain way to be stable emotionally.
Right. And even when we talk about anxiety through depression, those are, number one, those are two different, majorly different things. And even in those realms, there are some who their anxiety is very circumstantial. Like I am not a particularly anxious person. And over the last 3 years or so, walking through leukemia treatment with my son, walking through a lot of mental health challenges with our adopted daughter, and still maintaining a job. And it turns out there's other people in our family, like the cumulative effect of this, you know, I've had to cope with my anxiety and figure out ways to go through that. But then there's some people, Jenny, that even when things are pretty good, just there's a much more natural bent towards anxiety. Have you found that to be the case?
I would say anxiety for me is something I've learned more from other people. Depression has been my battle. And then later on, a manic kind of bipolar experience that happened.
But will you talk about the difference between anxiety and depression?
So my understanding and reading, I've read a lot about brain books, and I could diagnose anyone dangerously. And I choose not to do that. Anxiety is a form of depression. So they're kind of the same thing, but they exhibit in different patterns in our brains, in our bodies. So anxiety is just the panic feeling, just feeling like life is out of control. I can't manage it. A lot of fear. Depression is more based in sadness. It can be kind of in the form of anger, but depression is, you know, just the droopy feeling, and I can't get up and function, where anxiety is more about spinning thoughts and not being able to land properly.
Right. And in both of those, again, there are going to be some who struggle with circumstantial depression, circumstantial anxiety, and then there's some where it just seems to be wired into their DNA a little more. It's going to be what, you know, and I think one of the hard things, Jenny, is you then have scripture where Jesus says, be anxious for nothing. And so, well, I must be sinning if I'm anxious, and, you know, consider everything joy when you encounter various trials. So I must be sinning if I'm not abundantly joyful and if I'm struggling with this. So how do you get over this spiritual stigma around these mental health challenges that people walk through?
Yeah, I think going back to what you said about there's physical illnesses. So if someone has diabetes, or they have, you know, fighting cancer, you all have walked through that. It is a spiritual issue because the world is broken.
Right.
There's brokenness that we can't avoid. And, you know, the two, like I said, intersect. There's a point where we need to stop as Christians telling people that mental illness can be solved by prayer, and, well, you need to get more support, you need to pray harder, you need to be in God's word. Absolutely, we need all those things, and sometimes medically something has to happen.
Yeah, let me give you the physical side example. When my son was diagnosed with leukemia, I preached a service here a month afterwards. And so we were about 28 days into it, and it was therapeutic for me to preach. People are like, how do you do this? But like, it's good for me, because like, it's good to talk, and it helps me to point things to Jesus. But after preaching, and his was a 3.5 year treatment, his was one, it's very known how to treat medically. And somebody came up, and during the altar call, during that time, you know, at the end where we have the song and people come up, and she asked if she could pray for me, and I was like, sure. And as she's praying, she starts praying that God would open my eyes to other alternatives for treatment of him. And I just remember, you know, I'm trying to be the good pastor with my head bowed, my eyes closed in the middle of this, and just like my eyes pop open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want to spiritualize the cancer illness. And, you know, my thought is, okay, when your kid gets cancer, feel free to do that. But we're going to pray and trust Jesus, and then every medical possibility available, we're going to help, or, right, you know, we're going to pursue. And so I think that's really important for people to hear that, yes, there are certain, I think especially circumstantial issues in your life where the core foundation is like, you need to rest in Jesus. Mm-hmm. You need to take this back to the Lord. You need to restructure your day in such a way where you have time alone, intentional with God, to cast your cares before the Lord. But we also need to realize that some of these things are not just circumstantial. They are a product of the sin-filled world, but it's not necessarily a case that you are actively sinning because you can't get these thoughts from racing around in your mind.
Right. I've had conversation with parents that have, you know, children who are chronically ill and children who struggle with mental health issues, and I've literally thought myself, and don't want to be reckless in how I say this, but things that have blood work that really tell this is improving, mental health isn't one of those. Right. In some ways it would feel easier in a sense to have a medical issue that was measurable, mm-hmm, and mental health just isn't, and it feels a bit more helpless.
So Jenny, how did you get help?
I got help that time when I faced the depression with toddlers, because I saw my husband on the ground pounding his fists, literally, I don't know what to do.
Huh.
And seeing his brokenness about not being able to help. Mm-hmm. And we both just said, we're going to go together and see what a doctor could offer.
Yeah.
That's so seeing great. Him fall apart. And I would say I did start, you know, I think I took a depression test online, you know, am I really possibly struggling with something? Uh-huh. So that was, just faced it.
It's nice. The internet can help you self-diagnose things, at least to
sometimes dangerously
move along. And hey, 2 weeks later, Google will start giving you advertisements for everything you need to fix your problem.
Yes.
So you basically took the step to get help when the light bulb went on that this isn't just affecting you, but it is massively affecting the people you love, mm-hmm, very much.
Yeah, and I think with depression and anxiety, the highest symptom is, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. Mm. There's nothing wrong. I can do this. I can pray my way out of this. I can, you know, just the admittance that I need help. That's that one of the highest symptoms listed on depressive and anxiety lists.
Right, is that just that you'll find your way out,
yes,
that you can do it. Can you describe what is it like when you're in that pit of depression? What are the thoughts? What are the feelings?
So just absolute helplessness. You know, sometimes thoughts, I didn't have what you would call, you know, typical suicidal thoughts, and I did, because they looked like this. I just would rather not wake up.
Mm.
And that was probably, you know, the darkness and the aloneness is what I remember the most, just, and not being able to articulate why this is how it is. And my dad had died, so it definitely was circumstantial. And looking at the chronology of life, I had a clear chemical imbalance that I get to address medically. So being in a crowd of people, for me, I remember hiding in the bathroom a ton at church. Like, I couldn't deal with people. I didn't have enough to give even to my toddler's young kids at home. And
you're a pastor's wife, so there is this either a real or imagined expectation that you should be there for everyone. And that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I can tell you my least favorite time. Well, top five, like as far as chronic least favorite times as a pastor is that go around and greet everybody mm-hmm. time. I'm a fairly sociable person, but man, I do that by force of will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it cranks up my anxiety. Maybe, I don't know. There's very few people on earth that really enjoy walking around and meeting 50 to 100 to hundreds of people in a short time period.
Sometimes if you miss that one person, they might leave the church because you didn't say hi that day.
Right, yeah. I have freed myself of that. Yes. It's like, well, I'm going to disappoint them anyway, so mm-hmm. we might as well let them find someplace early. Jenny, in someone's life, what are some of the signs that you would say, look for these things? If you're seeing or experiencing these things, then it might be time to go get help.
Mm-hmm. I think not sleeping on a regular basis is one of the biggest things, not being able to calm yourself at night. Sleep is so important to me. And the racing thoughts, whatever they may mm-hmm. be racing, spinning thoughts that they really are for hours and hours. And I love the differential between circumstantial anxiety and depression and the long term,
right.
but particularly the people that just nothing's happening and I'm still really, really anxious and have no idea why.
Yeah. And if you're one of those people, I think sometimes you can mistake it for circumstantial because you can always find a circumstance to be anxious mm-hmm. about. There is always something that will take your worry. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, and everybody has different capacities as well. Like, for, you know, what we deal with in our family doesn't put me in a constant state of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But if I describe our life to somebody else, it would crush them. But it was kind of put on us a piece at a time, so you get used to it. But yeah, I think one of the cautions is don't excuse away, well, it's just because of this circumstance or just because of this circumstance. I'll give an example in mine. I know that mine was circumstantial, but there reached a point, I really distinctly remember it was about 8 months into my son's leukemia treatment. It was a super intensive time of treatment. He was down 3 times a week getting these very painful shots. Our youngest daughter was kind of going nutso. I had a middle school girl struggling with being a middle school girl. Mm-hmm. And I had been to this homeless shelter and done a devotion there and met this guy who was living in a van with his wife and baby who was a tree trimmer who had pawned all of his equipment. So I was like, well, you know, I'll go pawn his equipment out and he can help me cut down this tree and, you know, that way he can provide for himself. And I apparently was not in the situation to take on the massively dysfunctional life of a homeless tree trimmer without any tools. And I ended up having to go to a doctor and say, I need something to get me through this time period. And for me, you know, that worked then. And sometimes even just having it, like he gave me a prescription for, I don't remember what it was at the time, but it was like a daily situational anxiety pill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I only needed like 4. But even just having them relieve some of knowing, you know what, I can do this if needed. And look, there's no shame in that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things, Jenny, is people hear God never gives you more than you can handle. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true. The Bible does say that no temptation has overtaken us that's not common to man, and God will not tempt you beyond what you're able. So God never puts you in a sin circumstance that there's not a means of escape.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as life circumstances, the whole Bible is about bearing one another's burdens and how we need one another. And the whole purpose of the church is that you cannot do it alone. Like you can't be saved by yourself. You need Jesus to save you. And you cannot live this life by yourself. You need the community around you. Yeah. So advice, if it's you, I'm going to ask you to give advice from three different perspectives. The first is, if I'm listening to this and some of what we were talking about has started to register that, you know what, I empathize with these. I mirror these symptoms. I can't think of the word I need, but I'm hearing myself in these symptoms. Advice if it's that person.
So get help, because help can't hurt. You know, go and address the symptoms with a professional versus trying to get your spouse to help you with it. If medical help is what they give you, do what's actually said, you know. And for your situation, it was that you had the support as, right, as a backup. For my situation, it is a daily humbling of opening my pill container. As, and I have a symptom, a, you know, medical problem that I treat that I would never question related to some female stuff. I would never say, should I take these pills?
Right.
But with mental health pills, I well, maybe I could lessen this one, and maybe I could split it in half.
Right.
And just, we wouldn't do that with the normal physical issues that we have. So stay on track with a plan. Have people in your life that you talk to. You know, if it's therapy, great. If it's checking in with an accountability person that is a believer with you, being honest and saying, this is where I am. And, you know, sharing your story. I think that's one of the things I chose to do when I was, you know, writing and blogging myself. And I have gotten to see over 20 people in our church finally address things that they've been dealing with for years and years.
Fantastic. Since you're saying get help, some people, and even me, because I'm asked this question, I was asked this week and I don't really know the answer. In the range of going and getting professional help, can you just maybe briefly, what's the difference between a pastor and a counselor and a psychologist and a psychiatrist?
That's a lot of differences. So a pastor can help you address, you know, spiritual issues, and there may be things that you're creating circumstantially in your life. A counselor is a place just to have, you know, a landing space for all the thoughts that are going on in my head, being able to articulate. Psychologist kind of takes that up a notch and maybe will even teach you tools of behavioral management, of cognitive therapies. A psychiatrist is the only one that I have found that successfully gives you the medical profile of support medically, prescriptions, and there's no talking there. You know, we see a brilliant psychiatrist and a lot of people, he is not concerned about what's going on in your life.
No.
He's concerned about what is the symptom of the brain, what's going on with your sleep. And so a psychiatrist is not somebody you're going to spend time with engaging relationally.
That's good. And is there like a step system that you have to go to? Like, where do you start?
That's a great question. Start somewhere.
Okay.
Just somewhere. And, you know, even for an internal medicine doctor, some of them are aware of addressing mental health. So you don't necessarily have to go straight to the psychiatrist, but address something, because you don't want to be that person that hits the wall of, I don't have anywhere to go now.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I can't speak for all pastors, but you come to me and I'm going to know really quickly when I'm over my head.
Yeah.
And I have no shame in saying, I can't handle this. You know, you need somebody who is skilled, just like a plumber. I can pray for your house to not leak, but I still think you should get a plumber to fix that. Jenny, advice if you're listening to this and you perceive this in your spouse. So what would you suggest to those who are listening and are seeing these signs of anxiety and depression in their spouse?
Well, like I said, I think the first form of, you know, symptoms of anxiety, depression, whatever the battle is there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong. So, you know, creating a checklist by watching your spouse for a typical week and just, this is stuff that I've seen this week, and you're not sleeping, you're living at this place of adrenaline that is unmanageable. So being able to point out to them, these are some things I see, to help them understand, you know, I at least need to go talk to someone about this. And loving them enough to say the hard things, paying attention to what's going on. And if they're not willing, asking for some support of people that love them, maybe that have a different relationship. I know for me, hearing from my spouse sometimes isn't a place of receiving right. feedback well,
yeah.
but when a friend says it, it's even better.
Yeah. And it's hard because it can really feel like an attack from mm-hmm. your spouse, especially if you're not right in the head,
right.
you know, and you're not at that point, mm-hmm. you're not right in the head. And so it can feel very wounding. So I would say, as a spouse, you know, you want the only emotion you want to come with is love and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to have some real specifics. But I think also be careful that you're not giving an exhaustive list, because right. that will feel crushing.
Mm-hmm.
So point out the two or three, hey, these are, you know, these are signs, and maybe even encourage them, hey, listen to this podcast that I listen to and see if you right. kind of hear yourself in there.
I do also think going with your spouse to a set appointment, you know, just being another person in the room, especially if it gets to a point of there's maybe some medical treatment we can right. address.
Yeah, because, you know, if this is happening, it can very much be affecting your marriage. And sometimes we'll say, well, it's because my marriage is in trouble. Or, well, your marriage counseling will be great, but if you don't fix these underlying issues,
mm-hmm.
there's just going to be a limit to how good. And God wants your marriage to be healthy and thriving.
Right.
So if I hear this, and I know that I have a friend who's struggling with this, there's two different sides of that. Might have a friend who is struggling with this but doesn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, you know, what about your friends, Jenny? What, you know, what advice would you give for your friends? So let's start with, if you're hearing this and you have a friend who you think this is describing, but they're not dealing with it, what do you do?
I would definitely ask some questions. How long has this been going on? You know, has this been something you've struggled with since you were a kid? Is this a repetitive thing? And I would, like you said, compassion and love and grace goes a longer way than, oh, you need to do this immediately.
Right.
So give them some time to let it sink in that there may be a more serious problem than they can manage. And the depression tests, I've given that to a lot of people. Just mm-hmm. go online and plug in depression test or anxiety.
We'll put that on letsparentonpurpose.com.
Yeah, it really does bring, you know, not that that's a doctor talking to you, but it, I mean, some of us are living off the charts anxiety or really low in a depression that we just will live with for years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's not healthy to the rest of your body either. It's not mm-hmm. just, you know, it you'll start seeing those symptoms physically in other yes. areas as you live with that.
There's a really good book, and I'll make sure you have this resource. It's by a psychiatrist that's called The Body Keeps the Score.
It is fantastic.
Yeah, it's very scientific, lots of clinical studies. It is the book that has helped me understand the issues in my own children and in myself.
Yeah, I actually, we have that as an audiobook, and I put it on as I do yard work or cleaning the gutters. It's long and I can't comprehend it all at one time, but there were things as I listened, I realized, so my first wife died, and I think in many, many ways, like I went through that very healthily. Like, it was hard, it was rough, but I didn't do the normal path, and the Lord really moved and blessed and healed. But in going through that book, some things I'm aware of, wow, you know what? Symptomatically, as I got into my marriage with Emily, I was still feeling these things, or I was still guarded in the, mm-hmm. like I had walled off these areas of my life, and it took 5 years into marriage before some of those walls to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't sinful. They had nothing to do with Emily, but they were protective things that my body, that my mind had put up in there. So yeah, it's a fantastic book.
Instinctual things.
Right.
That, like, and it takes one traumatic event to trigger responses in us that, and I love the difference in you, your story, my story, that sometimes you need medical prescriptions for a time. Sometimes you need it for a long term.
Yeah.
Sometimes neurofeedback. There's so many treatments out right. there for the brain, but that book is so fascinating to listen to. I do think that book has helped me to help friends.
Yeah.
You know, just letting people listen to those stories mm-hmm. may trigger, oh, I have some serious stuff here.
And then one last, what advice would you give for your friends? As so, here you're a lady who has recognized and owned what she's dealing with, and now you're going to live with it the rest of your life, but it is going to affect your friends and your relationship. So what kind of advice would you give for them?
So I would give them some resources so they can see other people's stories and just say, you know, take a look at this. Defeating Depression is a great book by Leslie Vernick that I've suggested to a lot of people who, particularly the depressive stuff, but it does address all the features of depression. So putting resources in people's hands, putting a blog post, somebody else's story, spending time with them, really loving them and being with them in that scary place, and holding them accountable. What have you done to get help?
Great. Jenny, this has been awesome. I know this is going to be really helpful to a lot of people. So thank you so much for being open about your journey. And it is it's a battle, but you know, you're shining. You have taken what is evil in this world and the product of the curse of sin that you're born with of having to struggle, and you've turned it around for the good and the glory of God. So thank you for that, and I commend you for that, and thank you for your time here today.
You're welcome.
Man, I really enjoyed doing today's podcast. I hope it's a benefit to you as well. If you know that this is going to be helpful information for somebody, I encourage you to share it with them, post it on your Facebook or Twitternet or whatever you do, as well as go to letsparentonpurpose.com and go look at some of those resources that we talked about today. I'll link them in the show notes for today. And as well, something you could do that's helpful for me is if you could rate this program on iTunes or Android or however you do it. I know it's a little frustrating to do, but it would be really helpful as far as getting the word out. Again, this is Let's Parent on Purpose. It's a ministry of Covenant Fellowship Baptist Church in Stuart, Florida. We'd love to have you come join us sometime. And I want to remind you guys, hey, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So keep at it. We'll talk to you soon.